All right, welcome everyone. We're diving deep into the final chapters of Genesis today.
Chapters 48 through 50.
Yeah, these chapters, man, they're a whirlwind.
Oh, yeah.
We see the culmination of Joseph's story, the end of Jacob's journey.
Mm-hmm.
And get this, even though they're in Egypt, the promise of that return to Canaan.
Right.
It's still like this central thing to their identity.
A huge part of their hope.
Their hope, yeah. We're going to unpack all this with some help from Dr. Kenneth Matthews' insight. So
it really is remarkable how these chapters just tie together so many threads.
Oh, yeah.
From the entire book of Genesis, right?
So
the early promises to Abraham.
Yeah.
To the themes of God's faithfulness.
Mm-hmm.
To those unexpected blessings.
It's like watching the season finale of a show. You know?
Exactly.
Where everything...
When everything kind of comes together.
Yes, together.
One of the things that Dr. Matthews highlights is how these chapters really connect to those overarching themes of the whole book, you know?
Yeah. What was God's purpose for creation?
Right.
And then his desire for a relationship with humanity.
Right.
And, of course, those blessings that he promised.
Those blessings, they're not just like... You know, good luck or whatever. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
There's real substance there, real impact.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Matthews breaks it down
into
three elements. Relationship with God, land, and descendants.
Oh, wow.
And it's fascinating because it echoes, you know, God's first blessing.
Yeah.
Back in Genesis 1:26-28.
That's right, yeah.
So you see that consistency,
right?
Those promises to Abraham just woven throughout the entire book, even as the family faces all those trials. And
all the mistakes.
Make some big mistakes along the way, that's for sure.
It really makes you, like, you know, think about how much bigger God's plans are than our own, you know?
Absolutely.
And speaking of God's plans, Dr. Matthews, he has some interesting things to say about God's choice of Israel.
Yeah,
it's not because they were, like... more deserving,
right?
You know, than other nations or anything like that.
Right. Deuteronomy 7:7-12 makes it very clear God's love for Israel stemmed from his love for the patriarchs. So for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Okay.
And it reminds us that God's grace,
it
often works in ways that we don't expect, right?
Yeah.
Kind of outside of our...
human system of merit.
Yeah, our systems of merit and deserving.
Yeah, and that's actually really encouraging because it means that none of us are, like, beyond the reach of God's love.
Of his love and grace.
Yeah.
Even when we really, really mess up.
When we mess up, right?
Yeah.
But this this love for Israel, I mean, it wasn't just about showering one family with, like, special treatment.
No, it's part of a bigger vision.
A bigger vision, right?
Absolutely. Dr. Matthews points out
that
God's plan was to reach all nations through Israel.
Oh, wow. It's like a ripple effect, you know?
Yeah.
It starts with this one family and then spreads outward.
To the whole world, yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there were some serious obstacles in the way, right?
Oh, for sure.
I mean, just think about all the internal struggles within the family.
A family drama?
Yeah, the family drama.
Pressure from other nations.
External pressures, yeah, from the surrounding nations.
Right.
It's a wonder they even survived at all.
Yeah, definitely challenges along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But even when things looked bleak, God's love persevered.
Yeah.
Sometimes it meant taking strong corrective measures to keep things on track.
Yeah, to keep things moving.
You got to admire God's commitment to seeing his promises through.
Yeah.
Even when his people make it hard, you know?
It's like, come on, guys.
Right.
All right, now, let's not forget about Joseph.
Yes.
He wasn't just a dreamer.
No, he was a lifesaver.
He became a lifesaver, rescuing his family and countless others from that that horrible famine.
It's incredible.
I mean, it's almost... hard to believe.
Pretty incredible story.
Yeah.
And it's more than just a rescue mission, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Matthews sees this as foreshadowing God's intention to use Israel as a blessing to the entire world.
Oh, wow.
Think about it. Joseph, he's sold into slavery.
Yeah.
Faces all kinds of adversity.
He goes through.
But ultimately, he becomes the source of life
and
provision for others.
Even for the people who...
including those Egyptians.
Yeah, who enslaved him.
Who had enslaved him. Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful picture of God's grace and redemption.
I love how all these, like, seemingly random events are actually all part of...
the woven together?
Yeah, woven together into God's plan.
Into this intricate tapestry of God's plan.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But Let's get to the heart of these final chapters, right?
Okay.
Jacob's blessings. We're not just talking about some casual, like, good luck, have a good life.
Oh, no. These were a big deal.
This is a big deal, right?
Yeah, this was patriarchal tradition, a way of passing on the promises and the favor of God.
To the next generation.
To the next generation.
Well, it's a spiritual.
Think of it as a spiritual inheritance.
Yeah,
a
spiritual inheritance.
With the power to shape the future.
Shape the future. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this play out first with Joseph's sons.
Right.
Manasseh and Ephraim.
Mm-hmm.
They were born in Egypt, right?
Right.
To an Egyptian mother.
Yes.
So their place in this whole lineage of blessings, mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably like a little uncertain, you know?
I'm sure Joseph was a little worried about that.
Not that he was.
Yeah, wanting to make sure his sons were included
in
Jacob's blessings.
In those blessings, yeah.
He wants to secure their place in the story of God's promises.
And Jacob, he doesn't disappoint.
No, he doesn't.
Genesis 48.5.
Yeah.
Jacob, he formally adopts Ephraim and Manasseh,
yay,
giving them equal standing.
Double standing with his sons.
With his own sons.
Powerful act.
That's huge.
That speaks volumes about the inclusiveness of God's covenant.
And, you know, I was thinking, like, as someone who values listeners' interest related to inclusion, this must have been really radical back then.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Challenges our assumptions about how God's grace works.
Yeah.
It's not limited by bloodlines or culture or anything.
Right.
It's available to all who receive it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
And it's not just a legal transaction.
No.
Right? There's this, like, real tenderness.
Oh, yeah.
In Jacob's words.
Mm.
Especially when he mentions Rachel's death.
Yeah, when he's blessing the boys.
Yeah.
It adds another layer there.
Like an emotional layer.
An emotional layer to the scene.
Dr. Matthews points out something really interesting, too.
Okay.
The repeated use of the name Israel for Jacob in this passage.
Yeah, that's not accidental.
I don't think it is, no.
Remember, that name comes from Jacob's wrestling match with God.
Oh, yeah, back in Genesis 32.
Back in Genesis 32.
Yeah.
It's a reminder of his transformed identity and his new calling.
Right, yeah.
So by using that name here,
mm-hmm.
Jacob emphasizes that these boys are being grafted into the same covenant promises.
Like their identity's being redefined right in front of us.
Yeah, they're becoming part of something much bigger than themselves.
And there's this irony, too.
Oh, yeah.
Jacob's eyesight's failing.
Mm-hmm.
But his spiritual insight is, like,
sharper than ever.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It makes you think about how God works in our lives.
Mm, right.
Sometimes using our weaknesses to show his strength.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Then there's that moment where Jacob places his hands on the boys' heads.
Right, right.
And that's more than just, like, a gesture of affection, right?
Absolutely. You'll notice a shift here, almost like a change in tempo. Okay.
Dr. Matthews calls this a literary scene.
Okay.
Where the storytelling changes from prose to poetry.
Oh, interesting.
And it signals something important is happening.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, Jacob, he's not just offering a blessing. He's enacting an ancient ritual.
Oh, wow.
You know, reminiscent of oaths being sworn on one's thigh that we saw, you know, back in Genesis 24.
Yeah, that's right.
So it adds this whole other layer of weight and significance.
Yeah.
This is a solemn covenant.
It's a covenant, not just a blessing.
Yeah, being reaffirmed.
Okay, and here's where it gets really, really unexpected, I think.
Yes.
Jacob crosses his hands, giving the greater blessing to Ephraim.
Oh, yeah.
The younger son.
The younger son.
What do you make of that?
Well, this wouldn't be Genesis without a few twists, right?
Yeah.
We've seen this theme before.
Right, with Jacob and Esau.
With Jacob and Esau, the younger sibling is elevated unexpectedly.
Right.
And it speaks to God's tendency, you know,
mm-hmm.
to disrupt our human expectations, remind us that he operates outside of our limited understanding.
He does things differently.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Even when Joseph tries to correct him, Jacob insists, you know, that Ephraim's destiny is to be greater. And what's amazing.
And it happens.
Is it happens?
Yeah.
Ephraim's descendants become a powerful tribe later on.
Yeah.
They even represent all 10 tribes of the Northern Kingdom in some prophetic writings.
That's amazing.
It's a beautiful example of how these blessings weren't just empty words.
Yeah.
They carried real weight. They shaped history.
Yeah, they shaped history.
And that little phrase, May God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
It became a common blessing, you know, a testament to how this small moment became a cultural touchstone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, you know, on top of all that, Jacob assures Joseph that God will bring his family back to the promised land.
Even though they're living in Egypt, that promise.
That promise of return.
Of returning to Canaan.
Yeah.
Remains a cornerstone.
It does.
Of their identity and their hope.
Absolutely. And that ridge of land that Jacob mentions.
Yeah.
It's not just a random detail.
What is it?
Dr. Matthews connects it to Shechem.
Okay.
Where Joseph will eventually be buried.
Oh, wow.
According to Joshua 24:32.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And speaking of those blessings.
Okay.
Jacob doesn't stop with Joseph's sons.
He doesn't.
He has something to say about each of his 12 sons.
That's right.
And these pronouncements, they're...
they're more than just fatherly advice.
They're prophetic.
Yeah, they're prophetic.
They're like, they offer a glimpse into the future.
A glimpse into the destiny of each tribe.
Of each tribe, yeah.
Yeah, like he's painting this picture of Israel's future.
Wow.
Tribe by tribe.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So... let's talk about these blessings on the sons, which you said were prophetic.
Yeah, they are.
If I remember correctly, he gives them in the order
that
they were born.
Yeah, there's a definite structure to it.
Okay.
The way Jacob delivers these blessings.
Mm-hmm.
And that order
really
highlights the individual destinies of each tribe.
So it's like, you know, Reuben being the firstborn.
Yeah.
You would think he would get like the most.
The best blessing.
Yeah, the best blessing.
Well, not exactly.
You remember that incident?
Oh, yeah.
With Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid?
Oh, back in Genesis 35.22.
Back in Genesis 35.22.
Yeah.
That transgression casts a shadow over Reuben's blessing.
Oh, wow.
So he's described as turbulent like water.
Oh, okay.
Restless and unstable.
So almost like he's...
Yeah, and it's a reminder that our choices really do have consequences.
Yeah.
Even generations later.
Wow,
Yeah.
And then Simeon and Levi, they were the ones that were involved in that revenge against the Shechemites. Right, after Dinah.
After Dinah was assaulted.
Yeah. What does Jacob have to say about them?
Yeah, I'm a little afraid to ask.
Well, their blessing definitely reflects that dark chapter.
Okay.
Right? Jacob calls them out for their anger and their violence and pronounces a curse on their actions.
Okay.
It's interesting, though, because Dr. Matthews connects this to their scattered destinies.
Oh, okay.
You know, the tribe of Simeon eventually just gets absorbed into Judah.
Right.
According to Joshua 19.1 and 9.
Okay.
And then Levi, while they don't receive a distinct portion of the land.
Okay.
They're granted 48 towns.
Okay.
And pasture lands.
Right.
So even in their scattering, they're still part of the 12 tribes of Israel.
Yeah. It's interesting how that number 12, it's like it holds everything together.
It does.
Yeah. Okay. So what about Judah?
Jeez.
His blessing seems like a major turning point, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
In the story.
Absolutely. Yeah. Judah's blessing.
Yeah.
It really stands out. It's like a spotlight on the future pointing towards David.
Oh, wow.
And even Jesus.
And even Jesus.
Yeah.
He's described as a lion's cub.
A lion's cub, yeah.
You know, powerful image of leadership.
Yeah, of strength.
Strength, kingship.
Yeah, and then there's those symbols.
Yes.
The scepter and the ruler's staff.
Yeah, they're not just random props.
Yeah.
They represent kingship.
They represent kingship, yeah.
Yeah, and when you connect this blessing to the Davidic covenant.
Right, in 2 Samuel 7.
2 Samuel 7.1 3:16.
Yeah, 13 through 16.
It becomes even clearer.
Okay.
God's promise of an everlasting kingdom.
Through David's line.
Through David's line.
It's pretty amazing.
So Judah's blessing, it's not just about Judah. It's about this incredible lineage.
Lineage that leads to Jesus.
That leads to Jesus.
Oh, he's even called the line of the tribe of Judah.
Right, in Revelation.
In Revelation 5.5.
It's amazing how these ancient words,
they echo.
They echo throughout history.
Through history and point us toward Jesus.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, there's this part in verse 10 that mentions Shiloh.
Oh, yeah.
What exactly does that mean?
Well, that's where things get a little tricky.
Okay.
There are different interpretations of Shiloh.
Mm-hmm.
It could refer to a person, a place.
Okay.
Or even a tribute.
Oh, okay.
Offered to a conquering king.
So, like, a gift.
Scholars have debated this meaning.
For centuries. Really?
Yeah, and it's one of those details.
Is it even more intriguing?
It does. It invites us to dig deeper and explore different perspectives.
I like that.
Yeah.
So we've covered the big ones there.
Mm-hmm.
Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah.
It's a big four.
What about the other sons?
Well, Dr. Matthews does give us some insights into their individual destinies.
Okay.
For example, Zebulun.
Yeah.
He's blessed with access to the sea.
Okay, so maybe like a...
suggesting a role in trade and commerce.
Right, yeah.
Issachar is depicted as strong.
Okay.
But possibly burdened. Maybe hinting at agricultural labor?
Oh, interesting.
And then there's Dan, described as a serpent.
Ooh.
So, I mean, what does that symbolize?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Cunning. Danger.
Both.
A bit of both.
Yeah, it's fascinating how these blessings, you know, they leave some room for interpretation, yeah.
Allowing us to imagine how these tribes will develop.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Now,
over time.
We can't forget about Joseph.
Right.
Because he already received a blessing.
He did.
Back when Jacob adopted his sons.
Yeah, back in chapter 48.
Right. So is there more?
Oh, there's definitely more.
Okay.
I mean, his blessing in chapter 49.
Okay.
It's full of this rich imagery.
Okay.
Depicting him as a fruitful vine.
What?
Symbol of abundance and prosperity.
Okay.
Acknowledges the attacks he's faced,
mm-hmm.
but emphasizes that his strength came from God.
So he's like been through the fire.
Yes, absolutely.
But still comes out.
It's a beautiful testament to his resilience.
Yeah, to his faith.
And his unwavering faith.
So how does Jacob, like, differentiate Joseph's blessing from Judah's?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Because they both seem, like, pretty significant.
They do. And Dr. Matthews points out that while Joseph is called a prince among his brothers, acknowledging his leadership role...
In Egypt,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The specific promise of kingship in Canaan belongs to Judah's line.
To Judah's line.
So a subtle but crucial distinction.
Okay.
Yeah.
So different kinds of leadership.
Yes.
Different destinies.
Yeah.
But both rooted...
both rooted in God's blessing.
In God's blessing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder if there was any, like, sibling rivalry going
that's
on behind the scenes. Really.
Yeah.
So before we move on to Jacob's death, what's, like, the overall takeaway?
Yeah, so Dr. Matthews highlights three key takeaways from these blessings. First, all 12 tribes were blessed, highlighting the unity and the shared inheritance of Israel.
Okay, so a sense of unity.
Unity,
even though
even in their diversity.
They're different.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the second one?
Second, each blessing was unique, reflecting God's specific purpose for each tribe.
So he had a plan for each of them.
Yeah, so... he had a specific plan for each tribe.
Okay.
And then third, he emphasizes the repetition of that word blessing throughout the passage, right?
Okay.
Underscoring its central importance.
So blessings are important.
Blessings are important.
Yeah.
Very important.
It's like this beautiful tapestry.
Yeah, it is.
Of blessings weaving together the destinies of a whole nation.
Of a nation.
And speaking of destinies.
Yes.
We need to talk about Jacob's death and burial.
Yes.
And those final instructions that he gives, they are
powerful.
Powerful, yeah.
Jacob specifically asks to be buried in the family plot at Machpelah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the same cave.
Right.
Purchased by Abraham.
Oh, yeah, back in Genesis 23.
Back in Genesis 23.1719.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
So it's a reminder of that continuity of family, of legacy being cast down through generations.
You can feel like that connection to his ancestors.
Mm-hmm. That deep desire to be connected.
Right.
To be a part of that ongoing story.
And all those ancient burial rituals.
Oh, yeah.
They're always so fascinating.
They are.
Dr. Matthews talks about the embalming process.
Right.
And then the mourning period. 40 days for embalming.
42.
70 days of mourning.
Wow.
By the Egyptians.
It's a long time.
That seems like such a long time.
Compared to our modern customs.
Yeah, for sure.
It speaks to the importance of ritual in that culture, honoring the dead, recognizing the weight of loss.
Yeah.
And this wasn't just a private family affair. The funeral procession was a spectacle.
A big one.
With chariots, officials, horsemen. The whole works.
Wow.
Even the Canaanites took notice.
They did. Wow.
They remarked on the solemnity of the occasion. It was a public event. Imagine the impact on the Canaanites.
Yeah.
Witnessing this grand display of mourning.
For Jacob,
it foreshadows Israel's rise to prominence.
Wow.
Something that you'll see throughout the rest of the Bible.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So Jacob's legacy is secure, but what about his sons?
Yeah, good question.
Especially after all that drama, that deception that they put Joseph through.
They didn't exactly have the best track record, did they?
Right. I can't imagine they're feeling too confident after their father dies.
Yeah, I mean, they did sell Joseph into slavery.
Yeah, it's understandable.
No wonder they're terrified of retribution.
Yeah.
They plead with Joseph for forgiveness, even using their deceased father's name as leverage.
Oh, so like a guilt trip.
A classic guilt trip.
Yeah.
But you can understand their fear.
Yeah. So how does Joseph react?
Well, his response is actually very emotional. Oh. He weeps.
Oh, wow.
Not out of anger.
But because
their fear reveals this lack of trust.
In their relationship.
Yeah, in that restored relationship.
Even though he forgave him.
He did. Yeah. It's heartbreaking because even after forgiveness, those wounds of betrayal can linger.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean,
think about it, listener's name.
Yeah.
If you were in Joseph's position, wouldn't you want your brothers
to like really believe it?
To fully embrace the forgiveness that you'd offered?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It takes time.
Mm-hmm.
Reconciliation takes time. Trust needs to be rebuilt.
And seeing those brothers bowing before him again.
Yeah.
Must like brought back some vivid memories.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like those early dreams from Genesis 37.
Yeah, 7 through 9. It's all coming full circle.
It's like it's all coming full circle.
Yeah.
But Joseph, he doesn't gloat.
No.
Instead, he says
one
of the most profound statements in the entire book.
What's that?
Am I in the place of God?
Wow.
What a statement.
What do you think he meant by that?
Well, Dr. Matthews points out that Joseph is acknowledging God's sovereignty.
Okay.
He's saying that even in their evil actions, he saw God's hand at work.
Wow.
You know, he remembers those earlier words in Genesis 45.7 to 8.
Okay.
That God orchestrated this whole thing to save lives.
Wow.
Even in those dark moments.
Joseph never loses sight.
He doesn't have God's plan.
Of God's bigger plan.
That's amazing.
It is.
And speaking of plans.
Yes.
We can't end this deep dive without talking about Joseph's death.
Right.
And that final request that he makes.
Yes. It really sets the stage for everything that's to come.
What happens?
Well, Joseph dies at the impressive age of 110.
Wow.
And even in his final moments.
Yeah.
His faith in God's promise to return Israel to the promised land, it never wavers.
Okay.
He even makes his brothers swear an oath.
Oh, wow.
To carry his bones out of Egypt.
When that day comes.
When that day comes.
It's like he's holding on to that promise even in death.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
And that request to have his bones carried back to Canaan.
Right.
It's more than just a sentimental wish.
What is it?
This detail about carrying Joseph's bones out of Egypt sets the stage for the Exodus story.
Oh, wow. So it's like a...
It's a thread of anticipation that runs through the very last verses of Genesis.
Wow. So it's not over.
It's not over. It's just...
Like a comma.
A pause.
Not a period.
Yeah. His body's embalmed.
Embalmed and placed in a coffin.
His story...
But his story isn't over.
Is not over.
No.
Okay. I'm ready to dive into Exodus.
Okay.
But first,
okay.
Let's recap
what we learned.
From this incredible deep dive. Into the final chapters of Genesis.
What stood out to you most? You know, honestly, there's just so much here in these chapters.
Yeah, it really is packed.
It's hard to pick just one thing, you know.
Yeah.
But I think what really got me was seeing how faithful God is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when we humans mess things up, really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
He's still working to bring about his purposes.
He's working all things together for good.
And those blessings, man, it's like they're time bombs, you know, shaping history.
They have ripple effects.
Yeah, ripple effects in ways we can't even imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and the anticipation.
Yeah.
Of Israel's return to the promised land. Yeah. I mean, it's palpable. It really leaves you wanting more.
It makes you want to go right into Exodus, you know?
Yeah.
But before we close this chapter,
okay.
Dr. Matthews leaves us with this this one last thought-provoking point.
Okay.
He reminds us that Jesus, he is the ultimate fulfillment
of
God's promises to Israel.
Yes.
The one who brings salvation to all nations.
To all nations. That's right.
So it's like, you know, all those threads, all those themes, promise, blessing, redemption, they all
lead to Jesus.
Yeah, they all lead to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder, you know.
It does.
How do those themes, blessing and faithfulness, how do they play out?
In our own lives.
In our own lives.
Yeah.
You know, what are those unexpected turns that God might be using to shape our destinies?
Yeah, even when we can't see the big picture.
Even when we can't see the big picture. Yeah, that's a good point.
Those are great questions to ponder as we move on to Exodus.
As we move on.
The story continues.
Yeah, the story of God and humanity continues.
And it's full of surprises.
And it's full of surprises, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
Well, that was an incredible deep dive.
It was a good one.
I feel like I've learned so much about God's faithfulness.
Yeah.
His amazing plan for humanity and the power of those blessings to shape history.
It's amazing how much is packed into these final chapters of Genesis.
They really set the stage for everything that follows.
They do.
And I can't wait to see how it all unfolds in Exodus.
Me too.
Thanks for joining me on this journey.
It is my pleasure.
And until next time.
Until next time.
Keep those deep dive questions coming.
Yeah, keep them coming. We'll be here. Ready to explore.
Ready to explore.
Yes.